Hello, podcast listeners and anime fans. This is Torin.
And I'm Andrew.
You were a fuzzy Andrew for a second there. And no, today is a first because we are covering a movie. More specifically, we are covering the ridiculousness that is Promare from Studio Trigger. For those who have not watched it yet, it is available on HBO Max or you can rent it on Amazon. It's not easy to find anywhere else.
I found it in English at a Target.
Yeah, it is available to purchase. As far as the next episode, though, keep an eye out on Twitter and all that for what we're going to be doing next. We're not doing a good job.
I'm already halfway through Yuru Camp if we want to do that.
Yeah, Yuru Camp might be the next one. I'm totally down for that, too. So, everyone, we're going to cover Yuru Camp or Laid Back Camp, if you want to go by that name. You can watch it. If it's the next one, cool. If it's not, it might be the next one after that. Anyway, with all this out of the way, of course, spoiler alert for the movie, even though from watching it a second time, it doesn't at all ruin the movie.
We can spoil quote unquote, whatever we want. It doesn't matter. Everything is just balls to the walls.
It is ridiculousness. But Andrew, go ahead and start us. What's your rating and thing for this?
If you just want the stupid Hollywood blockbuster where explosions happen and plot doesn't really need to make too much sense, it's just thing to thing to thing, this is your movie. I'll give it a 9 out of 10 solely for taking it from that perspective.
All right. That is a pretty high praise. My thing, though, is Promare is a giant demo reel for Trigger Studio as they flex what Studio Trigger does best. For my Trigger scale, it's a 10 out of 10. For a Trigger thing, this is amazing. For a reality scale, it's more like a 7 out of 10. But
yeah, that's probably more accurate. If I didn't know what this was and I didn't know who Trigger was, I'd be like, why is this? Just, I guess a lot of things happen, but
yeah,
it's very pretty.
The story exists purely because a story kind of has to exist. It's not that big of a part of it.
No.
It's just ridiculousness through and through. So yeah, if you go in with the expectation of don't look closely at this, just sit back and have that like blockbuster action film, or you just want to have a good time watching crazy stuff happen, then you'll love it. That being said, for those who haven't seen it since 2019 when it came out, or 2020 when it became purchasable, a calamity called the Great World Blaze causes half of the world's population to spontaneously combust, leaving them with pyrokinetic abilities. These humans come to be known as Burnish. 30 years later, Gallo Thymos, a member of the Burning Rescue Group, is living in the Republic of Prompopolis. Prompopolis. Weird name.
Pompeii.
Maybe. Possibly. On a firefighting call, Gallo has a run-in with Leo Fodia, the leader of the radical group Mad Burnished. Gallo manages to capture Leo. Turns out that Leo meant to get captured so that he could free Burnished that are in captivity. After Leo escapes, Gallo has another run-in with him and learns that his hero, Cray, is actually using Burnished as test subjects. Gallo approaches Cray about it, and Cray reveals he is using Burnished to create a drive engine for a ship to escape the planet that turns out to be dying from the Earth's magma going bonkers. Gallo refuses to accept Cray's migration plan and ends up arrested by Cray. Freeze Force assaults and captures the Burnished, which enrages Leo, who attacks the city looking for Cray. Gallo is rescued and ends up fighting Leo. Gallo and Leo, while fighting, are transported to a frozen lake that ends up being the old facility of Deuce. Deuce explains the situation to the two and gives them their Deuce Ex Machina. Yeah, that's the entire plot.
Yeah.
Not a lot.
I'm entirely certain, like, these names were chosen either because they're a pun or because they sound cool to Japanese ears.
It's hard to know entirely because when I was rewatching it yesterday with friends, one of them pointed out that Cray is crazy. And he's like, I wonder if that was partly why they used the name Cray. It was like, the dude's just insane. Like,
yeah.
So
it goes along with the puns.
Yeah. The names are just ridiculous. And we're also commenting about this movie I feel is even better for people who are like writers or understand writing, because there's so many references and jokes and tropes that they turn on their head throughout the entire thing that it's just nonstop. It's completely nonstop.
They definitely had a lot of fun, quote unquote, writing this as well as writing this.
Yeah, the guy, the actual writer for this, was the same writer that they worked with for Kill la Kill, and I forget one other as well.
Was it Gurren Lagann? Because
it might have been Gurren Lagann.
Because I think the art director for both, all three of those were the same.
Yeah, roughly. So first, one of the things I want to mention is we talked about how this is a Studio Trigger masterpiece. It's an original work by Studio Trigger. Almost everything they've done is actually original. But Studio Trigger, for those who don't know, I want to talk briefly about who they are, because a lot of people don't know them by name unless you're super into like anime and paying attention to studios. But you'll definitely know of works that they've done. So Studio Trigger was actually founded by former Gainax employees Hiroyuki Imashi and Masahiko Atsuka. Sorry, I butchered your guys' names. You're both awesome. And that's a big deal because, first off, Gainax is known for Gurren Lagann. And that's a huge thing that was very popular for a while because it's amazing. But Studio Trigger themselves, the first thing they did was Kill la Kill. And you either love it or hate it. One, because of the clothing thing that they do throughout the entire series.
And the escalation of combat in the whole series.
Let's just say I think Studio Trigger is the only company I know that can make Dragon Ball combat look tame.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Which is unusual. So yeah, the first thing they did was Kill la Kill. And once again, pretty much everything they do is original works. Kiznaver, I loved Kiznaver. That was Studio Trigger. Little Wish Academia is Studio Trigger. The movies are original works, and then they made the anime show that's based off the movies. Darling in the Franxx, they co-produced with Cloverworks and A1 Pictures. Also, just another hit. I loved Darling in the Franxx. And then the SSSS Gridman and Dinah Xenon. Those are all original works.
Yeah, those are really popular right now.
Yeah, they're all excellent. The big thing is the two guys that founded Studio Trigger, Imashi. He's been a director for Gurren Lagann, Kill la Kill. Studio Trigger did a Star Wars Vision episode, The Twins. Which he directed.
I saw that one too. That one is solely just an extension of Trigger in general.
Yeah. So it's like, if you liked that Star Wars Visions, especially the Twins episode, that was the director and one of the founders of Studio Trigger.
Yeah. They also did another one, but not one so crazy. I don't know which one it was though.
Yeah. But Imashi also was the key animator for Neon Genesis Evangelion and Fooly Cooly. And then his co-founder, Atsuka, was a storyboard/director of particular episodes in Sea Control, The Money of Soul and Possibility, which I loved. That was a good one. Daily Lives of High School Boys, Fruits Basket, the original, Gurren Lagann, and Neon Genesis Evangelion. He was a unit director for Gurren Lagann, Neon Genesis Evangelion, Deaths and Rebirths, as well as The End of Evangelion. These guys are well-known. They've done lots of great works. Studio Trigger is huge, and I'm sure some of you probably recognize, if not most of the things I mentioned, plenty of them. They're all very well loved and known pieces of work. Yes. And that immediately already tells you everything you need to know about Promare, because they all are very similar art styles, which is gorgeous, and ridiculousness. I think the only one that I would say is not ridiculous is probably Little Witch Academia. That's probably the most tame.
It still has kind of the stretchy style, but it is far more tame in terms of content.
Yeah, almost everything else is ridiculous combat. I haven't seen SSSS at all, either one of them.
I saw the first one a couple of episodes. I didn't really get into it, but it is a bit more, at least in the first bit, it's a bit more serious giant robot stuff. With like an underarching plot, and I didn't get past like three episodes.
Yeah.
Not because I was bored, but because I had other things to do.
Yeah, Studio Trigger is amazing. And the fact that they're one of the few studios I know of that like I said, out of all the things they've worked on, only two things that I can tell are not original. They hire the writers, they do all the work for animation, like they do everything, which is mm-hmm. impressive. Most studios are just, you know, picking up works for hire from people who want like light novels adapted or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. That is a pretty common thing, is just to be funded by your single season of a light novel or manga that got popular.
These guys know their thing and do their thing. And I'm assuming, I don't know for sure, I'm assuming that's why the two left Gainax and formed their own thing, is they just wanted to do what they wanted to do. Little bit of history lesson of Studio Trigger aside, let's get into Promare's world building, because I think that's a big part of this, is the world that they set it up in. So as we mentioned, there was the Great World Blaze, and that's what you start out seeing, is you start out seeing random people lighting on fire. And I gotta admit, I think it's a slow start.
Really?
I personally thought it was a little slow. Their attempt at a history, like, hey, this is what happened.
You're talking before they do the, like, oh, we gotta react to this fire that's happening downtown. Yeah. It is a very slow, yeah, I would say that's a slow start.
Yeah, it's like, hey, look at this person. Like, okay, they light on fire. Look at this person, they light on fire. Look at, and it's kind of slow and almost feels like they're doing a build-up, because it's each time it's almost like the time frame between seeing the person and the fire gets like shorter and shorter. It's almost like they're trying to build up a pace. Mm-hmm. But it just kind of was, to me, slow and tuned me out. Now, the moment you get in, which is a few minutes into the actual, hey, this is 30 years later, like, here's the actual movie, it is very fast. So it almost goes from like a 2 to a like 12 on a 10 scale, like just immediately. Yeah. It's just high action out of nowhere.
Firing people into the buildings with your rocket ladder.
Yeah, it goes insane very quick. So the main character, Gallo, is part of Burning Rescue, which is in essence, they're firefighters.
Yeah.
They're just firefighters. And we open on that call after that whole situation. We open on a call for a fire. And as you said, they're like flying around. You meet all the different characters.
Yeah, in a dramatic cut shot, including the mouse.
Yeah, oh, the freaking mouse.
doesn't show up very often.
It's back to my original thing I said at the beginning, where this is in essence a demo reel for Trigger. That mouse definitely feels like a, hey, we can do the cute companion. Like,
yeah, I saw that whole intro as like, this is actually a TV show that's been running for years, and this is their first big budget movie.
Yeah, yeah. I do get the... I've mentioned this multiple times. I think I mentioned it when we watched it originally, and then when I did the rewatch, I mentioned it to the friends I had here. That this... the art style and look of this, to me, is like a kid's show. Like, it gives me the same feelings of watching something like a Paw Patrol. Because it's very bright colors.
I get that.
Yeah. You got very bright colors, firefighters.
The edges are very angular, I would say, for like everything.
Yeah, I don't know if that part is contributing to the feel, but I think a lot of it's just the bright colors. Like, it's just super bright and contrasty. And obviously, their style has... it's almost reminiscent of hand-drawn animation, but not quite. It's very 2D, which I think is partly why I get that feeling too of like a kid's cartoon or something. So yeah, right away we get into the action of them responding to this fire, and we immediately start to understand a lot of the characters right away. So the main character is obviously very gung-ho, young kid trying to prove himself almost type thing.
Yeah.
The
fiery protagonists.
Yeah, he's got a burning soul, I think he mentions multiple times. It's burning firefighter soul. So they respond to this fire, and they're saving everyone, and it gets ridiculous right away. Like you said, they're shooting him out of a cannon, in essence. Like, the ladders, like, can shoot him. He ends up having what looks like a exosuit that he firefights with.
Right. And a traditional, I think, Kyoto firefighting outfit is designed based on the old style firefighting outfits.
Yeah. And then the science or the mad tech chick. I don't know if I'd call her a scientist, but the tech freak chick that's part of their crew decided to make him the Matoy outfit because he wanted to look cool.
Yeah.
And he like, okay, just cause. Because we also find out that he likes to look cool when he does stuff.
It's part of my burning soul.
Yeah, I don't know. So one of the big things I noticed right away with this movie that actually is rather impressive is, one, their ability to self-commentary the whole time. This almost is a spoof at the same time of like animated movies and all that, because they're constantly commenting on the tropes that they even use themselves. A great example of this is later on in the show or the movie when he's going through the base with Cray, and Cray's explaining the whole situation. They're following the elevator and then they're getting to where the ship is, like their big hidden secret. And you see a whole bunch of doors opening and Gallo's just like, why so many doors? And it's like, it's true. How come whenever you go in a film or something into like the big bad guy's base, he has to have like four sets of, you know, 2 foot thick metal door. Like,
yeah, really? If you get through one, you're probably going to get through all of them, but
yeah, it's the self commentary about all that stuff. And on top of that, I've never seen a animation movie or show understand space as well as Studio Trigger does in this and understand people's place in space. This entire time at the beginning that you have this happening, you'll have people like talking through, you know, into communication screens, you know, like we can do through something like Discord or whatever, or they'll be talking over the radio. And if they are talking into a screen with someone and then it flips to the person they're talking to and that person's talking to them through a screen, you will actually see them on the screen talking to the person on the screen. And on top of that, that screen has space. The person will be looking at that screen. If the screen takes up a certain space on the TV, people will avoid that space. And they do this with even like cutouts where like in a comic book or something or in a manga, you might have like just a little cutout like talking bubble for a character to be mm-hmm. there with the person like talking, even though technically like they're not.
Like a Star Fox 64 cutout talking in the corner.
Yeah. That thing will actually like change shape and stuff, and the person will respond to it changing shape. So if they start mm-hmm. screaming and it gets bigger, the person who is sitting there will actually
push it back.
Yeah, they will back up as it gets bigger, or they'll like push it away. Like everything in this movie is purposely understood as far as its space in relation to each other. And it's the same with we were talking about how there's the title cards for like people where their names will pop up and stuff. And that crap exists in real life. Like they might sit there, show someone, the title card pops up, and then they change to show the perspective of like the person who's interacting with them. And like the title card will still be there. Or like later on, the title card will drop and like everyone will respond to its like weight hitting the ground. Or
I love, okay, specifically, I believe either Cray or the Burnish in that first scene introduce themselves and the words of their names show up and then hit the ground. And then it happens on the other side as well. And then they're facing each other. And then their names are in the background, like they're real physical objects.
Yeah. But very late in it when Cray and Gallo are fighting in their mechs, like inside mm-hmm. the ship, they do the exact trope where the two of them are fighting back and forth with like abilities and stuff, and Gallo's like naming every ability he's using, like every attack he's using, and Cray's like, stop using stupid names for stuff, or like making stupid names for stuff.
He immediately does it himself.
He immediately does it himself, but that's where one of the title cards pop up for one of the abilities behind Gallo, and it does the drop, and like they both like jump up in the air from like the.
Yeah, it was so heavy, it bounced them up.
It's like, once again, their understanding of space and stuff relative to space. Like, everything actually exists in the world, and it creates so many tropes and wonderful reactions. It's just wonderfully done. I've never seen someone put that much detail into it, where in most shows, like, little images that are little side chat bubbles that pop up with someone talking or whatever just are a thing to show them as something is happening. It's like, hey, we want to see this person's face as they're talking to this person.
Whereas, or we'll cut the whole screen over.
Yeah.
And not have both people's faces in the same shot.
Yeah. And this is the only one that's like, no, we're going to not only do that, but we're going to say that that person's actually there and, like, have things respond. And
I did notice, if somebody's talking in one scene and the person in the screen is listening to them talk, if the person in the major part of the screen says something, I can't remember specifically, but I believe the boss was like, oh, you need to chill out, Cray. And Cray is, like, getting mad at him. And you can see it on his face.
Yeah.
That Cray is upset that he's being told to chill out.
It's just so well done. And you could tell they put a lot of effort into making sure that anything that existed on the screen had a presence on the screen. And things would respond and react based off its presence.
Yes.
It's just masterfully done. And I would love to see more people take that and run with it. And utilize that in their shows, movies, because it adds such another layer to it. Like I said, this is almost spoofing at the same time on what that genre is, while yet being its own serious, like, comedy movie.
Yes.
So, and well done.
I will say that first firefighting to the end of the firefighting bit is almost exactly 30 minutes. And if you want to, like, look and see if you actually want to see this movie at all, watch the first 30 minutes, and you can find out just from that if you want to watch the rest of it, because it's just more of the first 30 minutes.
I will say it's also interesting how with this movie, like I said, it's almost like a commentary and a spoof, but it's funny that Trigger is actually also spoofing on themselves. So as we were, I was watching it with the friends yesterday, one of them kept commenting, like, oh, this has that feel of Fooly Cooly, or this has the feel of Kill la Kill. And in that first fight, one of the tropes is in Kill la Kill, as they get stronger and the fight progresses, their clothing gets smaller, or they, like, shed clothing. And that kind of happens a little bit with the main character in that first fight, is, like, he has his big exosuit, and then it turns into his Matoi suit, and then, like, he gets the Matoi suit stripped of him, and actually, there are parts in the movie where, like, when the bad guys get frozen, actually, it's in the first fight, the bad guys get frozen by Gallo, and then the freezing, like, splits in half, and it actually strips their clothing, like, their outfits that they were wearing. So you're sitting here going, okay, it's a bit Kill la Kill. But then the main character, like, loses his Matoi suit, he's fighting Leo, and the way he captures Leo is his Matoi suit attaches onto Leo and, like, encases him.
You become weaker because you put clothes on.
Well, not just that. He literally says, you didn't think I got naked for nothing, did you? It's like, literally, Studio Trigger is commenting and spoofing on their own show, Kill la Kill. They're like, this isn't, we're not just getting naked for no reason. It's like, he purposely shed it to attach it to Leo. It's like, oh, that's good. Self-commentary on yourselves. I love it. So the first fight, we get introduced to Burning Rescue, the firefighters, and then Mad Burnished, particularly Leo, the main, I guess, he's probably as much a protagonist as Gallo is.
Yeah.
So, Cray's probably the main antagonist. So we get introduced to both of them, and we kind of get this nice setup where you can start to feel how it's going to play out. So you've got, you know, the good guys, which is, you know, Burning Rescue. You got the quote-unquote bad guys, which is Mad Burners. But you immediately realize that they're potentially not the real bad guys because we get introduced to Freeze Force. Oh my gosh.
Runs in like stormtroopers and are brutally violent to everyone.
Yeah, they just immediately don't care about anyone. They're, you know, supposed to be the good guys. Because it turns out that Burning Rescue are firefighters. They're not allowed to actually deal with the Mad Burnished, the bad guys, because You know, you don't have firefighters dealing with terrorists in the real world. So right. Freeze Force is supposed to, I guess, be like FBI or whatever. They're the ones that deal with the actual...
or the military terrorists. Or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're supposed to be the good guys, but you get the trope where the main guy in Freeze Force that I can't think of the name of has sharp teeth, like pointy, you know, shark mm-hmm. teeth. They come in and they just don't even care about their allies. They're just, whatever, we do what we want. We take control of the situation. We get the credit of you coming and doing this that you weren't supposed to do anyway.
And then we insult you and blame you for even participating in the fight at all.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, you immediately get this idea that, okay, maybe the bad guys aren't the bad guys. Like, it might be these Freeze Force guys.
Yeah, because the Burnish come in as like these horrible dark figures, like with skull masks and gangster bikes.
Yeah. And on top of that, Leo, when the three of them show up, Leo, a chair, like a throne appears behind him. And he like not only sits on the throne, he does the whole lean to one side with his hand like on his chin.
Demon King, yeah. I'm ready. I'm waiting for you to die.
Yeah, it's like you have to get through my my minions before I'll even bother moving type thing, which of course happens. And for those who saw my tweet saying we were doing this, that clip is when Leo comes off the throne. So when he starts sliding down and the thing appears and it turns into his bike and whatever, gorgeous looking clip. You're supposed to get that idea that, oh, these are the bad guys, but very quickly they kind of show you that, okay, maybe they're not the bad guys. And we do find out that one of the rules, actually, I think he says it at the end of that fight, that's like, we don't kill anyone. Like, the Mad Burnish do not kill anyone. We take pride in that. And it's like, okay. So apparently something's happening here. Not that this movie's trying to, like, have too many reveals or twists.
Everyone is very forthright about their motivations.
Yeah, so we find out, okay, he got captured. As I mentioned, the summary, it goes into the whole, he meant to get captured. And we find out that something's happening with the Mad Burnish. So I don't know how much a surprise it was that it turns out that they're being... like, obviously, the Studio Trigger kind of used this as a commentary about... racism, which in 2019 is kind of interesting, I guess. I mean, it was very generalized commentary about it.
Yeah. I could tell it was a commentary on racism, but it didn't feel like somebody was specifically being targeted, like a group was specifically being targeted as, oh, you guys are the ones that are being racist, like, did against.
Yeah, it definitely is, I think, it almost seems like it's broad strokes, like, okay, this group of people that's different is being, people are being racist against them. It turns out that that group of people, they play the whole, no, they're the same as you, like, they need to eat to survive, they need to, you know, they're human, even though you think they're not human, because they have this other ability that makes them different.
Mm-hmm.
And really the driving force for the main characters. So Gallo's driving force is just his pureness, his morality. Like he's very, wants to save everyone. Like he knows who he is and that's what's driving him forward. It's like he wants
to fight the villains and he's been told the Burnish are the villains. So he's going to fight the Burnish.
And when he finds out that they're not, he just wants to save people in essence. Like he doesn't care. He just wants to save people. So when he thought the Burnished were the ones posing risks to people, he wanted to be against them. When he found out that they're people just like anyone else, they weren't out there just trying to burn everyone down. Like burn.
Yeah. They're not mean people.
Yeah. But the crazy part is even when he finds out that Cray is the bad guy, he doesn't want to stop Cray. He's just like, okay, you're going to leave the planet because the planet's going to, you know, blow itself up or whatever. I'm just going to stop the planet from blowing itself up and save everyone. Like, he's like, he even says, I'll save you too, Cray. Like, so he's not necessarily against the bad guys as much as he's just for saving life and saving people. And that's his driving force. And then Leo is not really the opposite. But his driving force is just to stop people from hating on the banished or burnished.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
That's all he really wants is like, we just want to live our lives like humans, like the rest of the people. And that becomes the clutch a little bit later when he goes on the mad attack against the city where, you know, he's hunting down Cray. And Gallo's even like, hey, yo, you said you don't hurt people, yet you're rolling down the street just starting random fires.
Yeah, turning into a dragon.
Yeah, of course. And then later it's the one dragon's not enough. How about we summon three more? Because numbers, that's how you win this, right? So it makes me wonder, do you think, and I kind of already think I know the answer, but do you think they at all are attempting to character develop with them?
No. It's more of like, I have more information now and I can make a better decision, but my character and personality are definitely still the same.
Yeah. Overall, I don't think there is. There seems like there's a little bit when it comes to Leo, just because he does have that almost all is lost moment when he becomes the dragon the first time and mm-hmm. is just hyper-focused on Cray and kind of loses sight of what's around him and starting the fires and all that.
I wouldn't really call that character development as more of a point of weak, point of weakness.
Yeah.
Like a low point in his life.
And that's why I don't know if it quite steps far enough, because I think the only thing we could point at and say this could be a development is when the two work together. And then it becomes that question of, would they have not worked together before? Like, did they learn that, like, they need to rely on other people? And the problem is both Leo and Gallo are also parts of teams. Like, Leo's the leader of the Mad Burnished. Like, he has people that he works with. And Gallo's part of the firefighting group. So it's...
That we've immediately forgotten the name of.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. It happens. Burning Rescue. But it's why I feel like the people at the start, in essence, would have done the same thing at the end. The only thing is maybe Leo wouldn't have, because he seems to be equally racist against all people who aren't Britished. But obviously it wasn't a big part of the movie. Like,
no.
I think
the whole movie went way too fast to actually have character development.
That's part of it. It's not very long. Like, I'm actually trying to think about how long it is.
I thought it was like 2 hours.
112 minutes. So almost two hours.
Almost 2 hours.
So there's not much time to really get too deep into their development, especially with how much world building they have to do. And this is one of the issues you run into with any film, animated or not, where the world has so many differences from the normal world that you have to like set up history and all that. It gets a lot harder to spend time developing characters. And this definitely falls into that. Like, I think the only characters we really learn anything about are those two. All the side characters in Burning Rescue, we learn nothing about them. Like, we see them talking and stuff, and we kind of get an idea of their personalities, but...
Yeah, we barely see them at all. Like, that's part of the reason I said, like, oh, you already know these characters because of the long-running TV series.
Yeah, it does feel... I want to see an anime series about this world. I think that would actually be a lot of fun. Because all the characters are great, as far as we can tell. I really like a lot of the characters in Burning Rescue. I think they're fun. The captain seems really cool. The fact he kind of skirts Freeze Force and like
he's able to stand up to them and de-escalate.
Yeah, so I want to learn more about him. The crazy chick that like just keeps making crazy stuff for Gallo, like his crazy outfits and all that. And just the joke they constantly make about like, hey, stop spending your time and resources on like making these stupid, crazy experiments. And she's like, but maybe they'll be useful at some point. And then later they become useful.
Right.
And she's like, what would you expect? Like, hey, I got this because I planned ahead. It's like, she's just great fun. And then when Deus Ex Machina shows up and she's like, I want to know about this. What is it? What is it? Where'd you get it? She just wants to know everything about this big robot.
She almost bursts out of the communications screen to find out.
Yeah. Love her character so much. I want to know so much more about it. And so I would love to see this turned into a show. I doubt it ever will be.
There's no way. There's no way.
But at that same time, part of me wonders because, I mean, Little Witch Academia was the same way. They made, you know, a couple movies and then made a show about it. So,
I think the thing with that was it was funded on Kickstarter or something. And it got such a good response, they actually had the money left over to make a movie.
Yeah, but...
Or vice versa.
I would love to see them just post... they just post a crowdfunding and be like, would you guys like to see more for Premiere, like another movie or a show? I don't think they could really do another movie with how this resolved, but unless they did like a prequel type thing.
It would have to be a prequel, I think.
But a reimagining as an anime show, I think, would be like awesome, where they could dive more into the characters and the world. We're just going to have to talk about, I guess, the craziness that is some of the stuff that happens in this. So,
did we not already start?
Yeah.
The start of the podcast was like a while ago. What are you talking about?
The thing is, like, part of me is trying to have somewhat of a structure talking about this movie. You just can't.
Nah.
You just can't. It's so ridiculous and crazy. You just can't have a structure to it. Okay. One of the things actually I do structurally want to talk about, though, is when I was watching the movie for the rewatch, I noticed up to a point that though the music is good, Hiroyuki Sawano, awesome composer, makes great music. He's done some like openings and endings / music for shows like Blue Exorcist, Mobile Suit Gundam Unicorn, Aldnoa Zero Part 2, Attack on Titan. He's done like some of the ones for the movies and the shows for Attack on Titan. Seven Deadly Sins, Kabunari of the Iron Fortress. He's done a bunch of great music. Mm-hmm. I thought the music in this was good. But up to a certain point, it didn't, I think, contribute anything to the movie.
Really?
I think part of it was
I kind of get that.
They kept it in the background.
Reuse. Yeah, it was definitely a background thing. And they used it, not sparingly, but they reused a couple of the songs in the dramatic scenes, so I kind of like zoned it out.
Yeah, it's I think a lot of it was they kept it very low in the mix for a lot of the movie. It just wasn't really, they didn't swell it or have it respond too much to what was happening. And I say up to a certain point because I was sitting there talking to people about this where we were watching it. I was like, huh, you know, the music's good, but it's not really contributing much. And then that changes when you get to I think it is right when he is turning into the dragon. Like, they start to swell the music up into mm-hmm. this grand thing of the Promare breaking Leo free of the ice bullet, the freezing bullet, and then he, you know, gets all the power from the Promare and becomes the giant fire dragon. At that point, they swell up the music into that main theme, main combat music, and it's like, okay, here's the crazy moment of the movie where, like, he starts going on a rampage and... But at like that point, it was like, okay, this music's actually contributing to the feel of what's happening. But then the movie, you know, dials it back, and it's like, okay, well, now they meet Deus it like slows back down a bit. It was like, okay, it just the music kind of it was kind of sad that I felt like it just didn't contribute as much as it could have. Especially for how great of a composer Sawano is. But I wish they would have done more. And that was, I think, one of the few hits that I had for it. Back to commentary. When they find the facility for Deus, I love how he's like, hey, guys, how's it going? You know, follow me. I got to talk to you guys. And they, like, go down into the facility. And what's her name? The female, actually, I can't think of her name right now.
The older sister?
No, the younger sister. The one that hangs out with Gallo all the time. Anyway, I love how he's like, she's like, hey, don't follow him. And it was like, oh, this is a classic self-commentary again, where it's like random person shows up who seems useful or like pertinent to the story, like random old wise guy or whatever. And he says like, hey, come follow me as I explain stuff to you or talk to you. And then people just follow for no reason. And then they make the joke later where they're like, hey, why us? When, you know, he gives them Deus Ex Machina. They go to fly off to save the day. And they're like, why'd you pick us? I didn't. You just happened to show up.
Yeah. You guys are my Deus Ex Machina of just showing up. So here's the Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah. It's just excellent, excellent self-commentary that I love so much. That was the other thing I found hilarious as a self-commentary was when they first go to the frozen lake and you start to get that lovey-dovey feel between Ina and Gallo. And it's like, oh.
He drops her.
Yeah, it's like, oh, okay, there's some sort of, you know, romance thing that might happen here. You know, in most movies or animated movies, like, you know, they'd be pushing this romance throughout it because this happens fairly early. And, you know, they start there. He's like, hey, did you know that you can skate with your normal shoes? And they get close and she ends up like falling into his arms and she's leaned down in that classic like ballroom pose. And he gets really close to, looks like they're going to kiss. She like does the whole close the eyes, get ready for the kiss. And then he spots a flame like in the ice. He sees the reflection of a flame and just drops her. It's just like, yeah. Boom, no. I'm on my bike ready to go find out what this is. And I loved it. It's just Trigger being just like...
Throw the romance out.
Yeah.
Throw the dramatic romance out.
Yeah, Trigger just being like, oh, you think this is going to happen? No, not in our movie. Don't even think about the romance this entire time. Let's just get into the action. There's another, I think, self-commentary they pulled that I think that's
more of a trope. Subversal, because that's in like so many things of like the dramatic kiss, and she's one of the only female characters in the whole movie. So,
well, one of the only few that has decent interaction, because the Burning Rescue has what, three in it, at least two. I think it's Ina and the like scientist chick.
Yeah, the scientist chick.
Then you have Ina's sister on the other side, Harris. Yeah.
Like I said, the only three, like, very few female characters in this whole show.
Yeah, there's definitely not many of them. So it, and I guess that's what I'm talking, self-commentary, I guess, tropey commentary. I guess not necessarily only Studio Trigger, but it was nice, yeah. The amount of times they pulled stunts like that, where you thought it was going to follow down a trope, and then they're just like, no. And just throw it to the side or subverse it. It's insanely well done.
Yeah. Most of my notes for this, as I've told you before, are just in all caps of things like giant robot fight. Or if it's cool, it just happens.
Yeah. A lot of it is. Okay, one of the things we could talk about is what do you think of this concept of the Promare? Because we find out that the event that happened 30 years ago, the World Blaze or whatever, in essence, what happened was a parallel universe, a slit to a parallel universe opened up, and this creatures from that universe, which are the Promare, in essence, fire entities. And by the way, I did love when he was explaining that, how the little flame had this cutesy face pop up the moment he mentioned that they're like actually creatures. Haha, funny.
Yeah.
But the idea was that they showed up and... for some reason, when their presence showed up, half the humans, essence, created a connection with them and therefore became the Burnished. And the resolve they end up finding out is that apparently the combustion of the Promare is not complete. I don't know exactly what that means, but they wanted to burn hotter, brighter. So in the end, what ends up happening is you get the Promare connection and fire from Leo, and they use Gallo's, in essence, his morality as a firefighter to tweak the flames to, instead of being this crazy purple, to be blue, and they protect all the humans on the planet and just burn not only Earth, they burn the entire solar system. So like they burn the entire Earth and then it shoots into the sun. And then from the sun, it like hits all the planets in the solar system and just creates this giant flame that I guess satisfies the Promare. And then they leave and it closes up the rift. I don't know. I mean, as we said, don't look too closely at this, but it does seem very hand wavy.
The whole movie's hand wavy. I bring this up again. Yeah. We started the podcast a while ago. Where have you been?
It's interesting to me because the hand waviness of it is like, I find it funny how they're like, they need to burn stronger. We need to burn the entire Earth. Then out of nowhere, it just jumps to the entire solar system. It was just like, okay, all right. Like it looks well, cool.
It's trigger. They've got to go past the drill that can pierce the heavens, and like, we're gonna burn the universe.
Yeah. And I mean, it's probably also once again kind of a spoof on just the over the top nature of anime and all that, where you know they say one thing and something bigger or crazier happens. Same with their fight between Deus Ex Machina and Kray's weird robot. I made the comment earlier about, you know, he sits there and he's like, oh man, he doesn't like Deus Ex Machina. So Leo constantly changes it. And at one point he's like, oh, if only I had my Matoy. So Leo creates the weapon from the Matoy, the giant like umbrella-ish thing. And then he sits there and like goes to use the umbrella, but he like uses the umbrella, it like gets covered in flames, and then I'm trying to remember, it's like a three-step process for one attack, where it's like normal weapon covered in flames turn into dragon then attacks the enemy, doesn't get past the defense, so three more dragons are made because more dragons are going to do better than one dragon. They make the commentary in the same fight about if you scream harder, your attack's going to do better.
Right. He also comments like, why did you make it on fire?
Yeah.
Like, I'm a firefighter. This is wrong.
Yeah. Well, and the funny part is when he makes the Matoy weapon, the Matoy thing like actually uses ice. So I know one person commented on it when we rewatched it about like, why is it an ice thing? Because, you know, you'd think it'd be fire because Leo. And it's like, well, he's replicating the Matoy, which is a firefighter weapon. So I guess, you know, why not? It is funny how you look at other Trigger stuff and the ridiculousness that is Trigger stuff. But at the same time, a lot of the combat in this does remind me of Dragon Ball because of the craziness that is Dragon Ball combat, where it constantly is the trope of you scream harder, your attack's stronger. If your opponent stops you as you're attacking, you just have to like try harder and it'll go through. Or yeah,
you can't interrupt the villain while they're having a giant speech, but they do that.
Yeah, it is kind of that escalation that Dragon Ball does. But like I said, this takes it so much farther than Dragon Ball even does, which is saying something. Like I say, to me, it feels so much like a spoof that. It's kind of crazy that you can watch it and enjoy it as what it is. But when you do look closely at it, it is such a spoof, but yeah. Doesn't feel like a spoof.
No, it is two movies in that sense that it is a straight up action film and then also a parody of an action film.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think if I can come up with another example of that where something is such a well-done parody and spoof of a genre that people don't realize it is. One of the few examples I can come up with actually is Princess Bride.
I could see that.
Some people don't pick up on the fact that Princess Bride is just a giant parody, which is kind of amusing because if you look at the cast of it and the group that made it, like that's all they did back in the 80s was just one parody / spoof after another. They did like Robin Hood Men in Tights. They did, you know, Princess Bride. I'm trying to think of some of the other ones that they did at the time, but they did a whole bunch of them.
I guess I just did a Google search for famous parody movies, and Zombieland is on that list.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, The Naked Gun is more of a parody, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, most of them.
I would say Kung Pao, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, but that one, that is a great one. But to me, that one, I don't think people took seriously. Like, I don't think it was such a tight parody that people did not realize it was a parody.
Final Tap?
That one, actually, I could kind of see. That was the same group, yeah. Because they did Spinal Tap, they did Mighty Winds. They did a lot of parodies back in the day. And they were all pretty good, other than nowadays standards. People don't understand 80s, 90s comedy very well.
Yeah. The loss of a parody movie does require you to have seen the recent content and the recent tropes for that era.
Yeah. A lot of them, I think a lot of it also is that type of comedy. Nowadays, on-the-nose comedy doesn't fly well. And I think it's just because there's been so much of it over the years that people have kind of become numb to it, or it's become almost too campy, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, now that just falls under campy, and people tend to not enjoy campy things. But like I said, that's kind of the best I can think of, though, is Princess Bride for something that was solid parody to the point where people actually almost thought it was serious. I think that's in this entire movie kind of summarized, is it's over the top action that's a parody. So like, you can't look closely at things because the fact that it doesn't work is part of the joke.
Yes.
Which I think they did such a well job. Like I said, as far as a trigger film or trigger piece of work, I think it's a 10 out of 10. This is the epitome of what Trigger can do, which is why it just feels like a giant demo reel.
Yes. Like,
do you want to see how crazy we can get for our animation? Look at all these crazy colors and shapes and actions and things responding to each other. Do you want to see how good our action can be? Well, watch like this guy do three or four different things to make one attack. Like, oh, he's going to have this weapon pop out. Then the weapon's going to get covered in fire. Then that's going to convert into a fire dragon. Then that, like, check out all this crazy stuff we can do. You want to see how over the top our characters can be? Well, like, it's just a giant show off of Trigger being Trigger. And it was pretty well received. From what I remember, this grossed about $13 million worldwide when it came out, like over that first year. I did find it fascinating that of that $13 million that it grossed, trying to remember, I think like seven or eight of it was just in Japan.
Wow. Like
this only did about 2.4 million in North America, which.
Well, I mean, kind of that makes sense because if you're not getting too much of a theatrical release in the US.
Sorry, so the film grossed 13.8 million in Japan. Sorry. So it was a total of 17 million worldwide. So yeah, 13 million of the 17 million was in Japan alone, with 2.3 ish million being in the US and Canada. So I think part of that was just the release, like how it released. Because I think this released through a company I actually don't really know much about. Like, I don't think I ever saw this until you mentioned it. Like, I didn't even know it existed.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think might be partly why it didn't do so well in the US, is if they'd have put it on something like Crunchyroll on release, it probably would have done way better, or even Netflix. But back in 2019, Netflix didn't understand anime as well as they have in the past year.
I mean, Netflix has put a little bit more effort in lately.
I don't know what else to say. If you like Trigger and you haven't seen the movie, what are you doing? Watch the movie. It is Trigger to the max. If you're a person who doesn't like mindless action, then maybe it's just something to pass up, because that is the entirety of this. It is sit back and just watch the pretty colors in action and enjoy the ridiculousness that is Studio Trigger being Studio Trigger. That's about the best I can say about this thing.
Yeah.
It's...
I say, let your burning soul lead you to the movie.
Yes.
And I'll peek out the mics there.
Now, I enjoyed it. I definitely will recommend it to people who I know are really into action or triggers works. And yeah, with that, let us know. Do you want us to cover any other movies? I'm sure we'll cover movies here and there. I'm sure at some point people are going to bug us to do like Your Name or something like that. It's been covered to death, so I kind of am hesitant to cover stuff like that. But
yeah, the really popular anime movies are well covered.
Yeah,
at times.
I know, as we've talked about this, anime movies from this might just be me and the world I work in or watch and pay attention to, but it feels like to me most animated movies are romances or something of that sort, or they are like, hey, we want to keep this IP alive so that you guys remember that we exist until we make another series. So a lot of the times it's just some random weird thing inside of an IP. A good example of that is, you know, like My Hero Academia movies and stuff like that. Is it really contributes nothing other than to remind you that it still exists. I think the only exception to that's probably the Demon Slayer one, where that was one of the few that felt as its own. It stood as its own independent thing. And then they just made a 7-episode series about like recovering it.
Hey man, the My Hero Academia movies are confirmed to be canon. So all of those things that happened, including that part where, spoilers, Bakugo gets All for One and is now the inheritor for All for One, is totally canon.
How? How? I don't get it. I do. Whatever. I will say I do wish anime movies were. I wish more effort was put into them. Like I said, so many of them do seem to be just, hey, don't forget that we exist until the new series comes out.
Here's your canon. Your character's in a non-canon thing.
Yeah. Same with OVA episodes. A lot of the times it's just, hey, here's 3 episodes to keep you happy because it's going to take us another year to release, you know, the next season. Mm-hmm. Which kind of upsets me a little bit because a lot of the times, especially when it comes to romance ones, those OVAs bug you because it's like, well, what if he got with this character instead? It's like, don't do that to me. Don't do this to me, please. Yeah. So yes. Anyway, with that little digression out of the way, let us know, email us, tweet at us. What other movies should we cover? What other series should we cover? With the new season coming up and the old one about to wrap up, what do you want us to talk about? Once again, you can email us, animedigression@gmail.com, or tweet at us at animedigression. Keep an eye out on the Twitter for what we're going to cover next. And
it's going to be Yu Camp. I'm going to force you to do it.
Yeah. So you definitely watch that because it's either going to be that or that one's going to be very shortly after the next one. So Laid Back Camp is definitely going to get covered. With that, thank you all so much for listening/watching, and have a good one. Bye.
Bye-bye.